Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Well, welcome to the Side Action, episode 41, the NFC part of the NFL preview, and week one excitement. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Any excitement over the weekend we need to speak of this week?
Yeah, I had a great weekend. Was down in Indianapolis visiting the family. Got a lot of boating in and lake activities, some wakeboarding and water skiing and drinking. Went down and tailgated for the Indiana Ball State and state matchup down at Lucas Oil.
Ooh, cool.
It was a good time. How about you?
It was a big weekend, holiday weekend. I got to go to the AVP tournament for a little bit, which was awesome.
Oh, sweet.
And the Riverwalk, just a little bit, drinking with Greg and MJ, which was fun. And had another fantasy draft on Friday night, so totally full weekend again. So yesterday I just took it easy on the actual day off. So
that sounds nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, started a new job today. So, you know, just a lot of stuff over there, actually.
New job. Sounds like you had plenty of time to prep for this podcast then.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. No doubt.
Me too.
Well, let's jump into the episode. We've got a couple just betting and legislative updates. We will go over the NFL preseason final week four. And we'll go the recap of week one in college football and then look at week two for our picks. But the bulk of the episode will be spent on the NFL, the NFC conference preview, and then we'll go over our picks for the season for the Super Bowl. And then finally, the most exciting segment everybody's waiting for is the, what are we calling this now? The Circa Contest tete-a-tete. I don't know.
The tete-a-tete.
I like that. So we'll be discussing some angles that we're looking at to put in for the Circa Contest. As most of you know, Action and I are flying out to Vegas on Friday night to enter the contest Saturday morning. Try to win $1 million.
Yeah, sounds like the contest entrance is up over 1,400 now, so not quite the overlay that we expected, but you and I are super excited about it and can't wait to get out to Vegas and put our entry together and get a hat. We'll have to figure out who gets the hat.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They did say on VSiN today that they expected to go to 1,700, so there's probably going to be an overlay, so more money in the pot for everybody, and so let's get some winners here.
That's right.
All right, for the legislative update, let's see. Duffel bag better did hit it with Illinois, minus 17, didn't he?
Yeah, Illinois cruised on Saturday. Everywhere I looked, people were betting on Illinois. I think there must have been some information that came out. Mm-hmm. Not to mention Akron was pretty sad themselves, so
the Zips.
Illinois poured it on Saturday.
Yeah, the poor Zips had no chance in that one. Lovie Smith finally gets another win. Congratulations.
His beard is a little bit whiter this season, I noticed.
Oh, man. Horrible. So then you have a note here that three Indiana casinos started taking bets just this weekend, with the remainder rolling out throughout September. That's exciting.
Yeah, I was reading in the paper when I was back home this weekend that there's a casino down near Cincinnati that was taking bets. And then also there's one in Shelbyville, Central Indiana.
Okay.
And there's another one on my way home back to Detroit on Monday, and I called them, and they said they weren't going to be ready until the 17th. So,
oh, okay.
Womp womp.
Womp womp.
I was going to stop and put in a futures play, but it didn't happen.
And you said originally that the horseshoe across the border here was going to be on the 4th. Is that right?
Or that's right, yeah. As far as I know, they're still going to be ready to go tomorrow, recording here on Tuesday night. So tomorrow's Wednesday, they'll be opened up.
That's exciting. Hoosier State is way ahead of Illinois, so good for you guys. All right, well, let's jump into the nuggets from the NFL preseason week four. You had a couple of spots there. You had Detroit at Cleveland under 34. You had 12 points in the first half total, but 24 in the second half, so that one shot over, didn't it?
Yeah, barely made it over. I was trying to follow these games on Thursday night. Didn't get to watch any of them, but I thought this one was a surefire winner, and then it ended up going over in that last quarter and was a loser.
That's too bad. And then the other one, though, did hit the under barely. The Rams at Houston. We talked about how McVay didn't care about the preseason. There was a lot of stuff going on in Houston this weekend besides this. And they did get under 33 at 22-10 with the winner, with the Rams winning, actually.
Yeah, that one stayed under. And I wonder if many in the Texans front office were even watching the game. It sounds like they were doing some backroom deals all weekend long. So
yeah, there was some crazy changes down there. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, I guess. Yeah, so with those changes, looks like McVay finally won a preseason game.
Yeah, that's right. They did get to the window as short underdogs, I think, in this week. But more importantly, the under came in and I was able to split.
That's all right. They'll keep the vig on you. But
that's right.
Okay, let's jump into college football. We've got week one and week two go look ahead. So first of all, week one, I noted on Twitter that we started off red hot in these picks, and then it kind of cooled off when we hit Saturday and Sunday. First, the Toledo was plus 12 at Kentucky, and this game was right there most of the time, but looks like they had an injury, and then Kentucky was able to close out 38-24 to get the cover.
Yeah, the first half, Toledo was looking great. I think they were up a score early on, and then the quarterback got knocked out in the third quarter, and that was all she wrote. Kentucky looked okay. Certainly not the same team as last year, though, and that's something I'm going to keep my eye on going forward.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that got to look at those games, look at those injuries. There were quite a few key injuries in college in week one, which is kind of disappointing, but you got to look at that going ahead. You also had, we had Virginia was 2.5-point favorites at Pittsburgh. This one came in for us, didn't it?
Yeah, Virginia and Bryce Perkins played really well, and they ended up covering this game easily, winning by multiple touchdowns.
Yeah, they looked really good. They're one of the teams we talked about in the ACC preview, so it's good to see Pitt, who kind of, I don't know how they made it to the title game last year in the ACC, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen this year.
Yeah, that just shows you how weak that side of the conference is, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be a weak group. The next game, we kind of split on this one. I didn't end up betting or anything, but we had Florida State minus 5 versus Boise State. And really, Florida State, originally, this was an interesting game. They were supposed to play in Jacksonville, but because of the hurricane, they relocated to Tallahassee, so then it became a home game. And that was one of the things I was backing off on. Oh, the Noles are going to get a home game. It's going to be different. Well, Boise, after kind of trailing early, kind of big, they just rolled them down the stretch and won this game outright to get that win.
Yeah, I was really impressed by Boise State. You and I had talked that when the game got moved to Tallahassee, it sounded like that Boise was going to be in a world of hurt having to play a true road game now, especially with that young cast on offense. But I'll tell you what, that Hank Bachmeyer was impressive. 400 yards passing and added a touchdown and one interception, and he was just steady the entire second half. They really turned that game around after halftime.
I think they had over 600 yards of total offense on that Noles defense. Not doesn't bode well for the season in the ACC, but you know.
No, especially after you and I had praised their defense a couple weeks ago on that preview podcast. Doesn't really look too hot right now.
Not at all. Not at all. So we stay in the ACC. We have Clemson. There was a couple looks in this one. First, the first half, you liked the 21.5-point spread for the first half against Georgia Tech with the new coach at Georgia Tech. And you also liked the over, the 32, which seemed logical if they're going to blow them out that badly. But they didn't get to that 32 because they held Georgia Tech down, but they did cover that 21.5.
Yeah, we really just needed one more score there. And thinking back, though, looking at these two numbers, and it was probably difficult for both of these outcomes to come in the more I think about it, because either you're asking for a Georgia Tech touchdown to get it over the total,
sure,
and if that happened, then it would have been tough for Clemson to cover. So true. Looking back, probably not the same plays I would have made. I think I was looking at a split there, most likely outcome in all scenarios.
Right. That makes sense. And then they laid 36 on the full game, and they did cover that, right?
Yeah, I think they did get final victory. It was 52-14.
38, yeah.
Yeah, so they did get to the window.
They got there. I mean, they look awesome, so they're going to be the juggernaut. But we talked about this. That'll be an angle most of the season. Get that. The first half spread is always looking good for them because they're going to come out, you know, firing.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they're laying this week in that first half against Texas A&M. That should be very interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting one we'll talk about in a minute. Another game we looked at, and I know that we didn't have different views, but I different bets on this one, UCLA versus Cincinnati. Cincinnati was basically laying 3 points at home. I thought that wasn't giving them enough respect. And then the under 61. Well, that was a an easy one for you on that, the under. It was only 24-14. But Cincinnati covered pretty easily. It was a tough game, but I thought Cincinnati was getting disrespected, and it came through, so I actually won that bet this weekend.
Yeah, great call by you. We kept watching that line go down and down and down, and you asked me, why is UCLA getting so much money? And obviously you were right, and all the pros who were betting on the Bruins were wrong in this case. It was 10-7 at halftime and was a very slow-paced game, just like we had predicted. So stayed under, and you had the winner with the Bearcats.
That's right. You took it easy with the under. You were sleeping like a baby there. A couple bad beats we wanted to note. Northwestern versus Stanford. This was a crazy game. Stanford really didn't look that great. They were playing not to lose or something. It was 10-7 with 3 seconds to go or something. Like, or 25 seconds you got to down. They were down three. And then, oh, man, the Northwestern quarterback rolling to his left, gets pummeled. Ball comes out, you know, squeaks into the end zone. Stanford jumps on it and gets the 17-7 win and the cover. I mean, that was just insanity.
Yeah, this one is probably going to go up in the Hall of Fame of all-time bad beats. I saw it all over media coverage on Saturday, and thankfully it wasn't on either side of this game, or else I would have been sweating it out pretty hard.
Yeah, me neither, but it's kind of crazy. But just to the point, this Pat Fitzgerald, man, the guy can coach. I don't know what it is. He coaches his team, and they're always hanging around. They don't have the talent. You know, Stanford's supposed to be pretty good, but they definitely have a long way to go.
Yeah, I read that the Northwestern freshman quarterback was terrible in his debut, and at one point they had to switch him out and go to TJ Green, the veteran, and he kind of kept them in the game in that second half before. I also read that Costello, the Stanford quarterback, got knocked out, so that could have been a factor in the outcome as well.
Limited the points there.
Mm-hmm.
The other bad beat was Oregon versus Auburn, man. And, you know, I took the money line in this, as you've noted, plus 150. I was excited when the line went up to four. I'm like, oh, man, like Oregon's getting disrespected here. They're a really good football team. I know Auburn's good, but this is a neutral field game. And Oregon came out and was kind of housing them. They were playing great. It was 21-6 or something.
Yeah, 21-10, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
Or maybe even more.
They were up, I think it was 21-6. They were beating them by two full scores, and it was well into the third quarter. But they did change Auburn. I give Auburn a lot of credit. They changed their approach. You know, Bo Nix, their freshman quarterback, kind of wasn't getting it done. And they just started running the ball down Oregon's throats, and they really couldn't stop it. And the guy running back in the second half, Whitlock or something like that, he was killing it. He was getting yards after contact left and right. Probably had 70 of those yards in the last 18 minutes of this game, and it set up those scores. But Oregon had their chance. They still had the ball, and it was a crazy situation. I know you watched the game. Third and like eight or something, the starting quarterback completes the ball but gets hit because knee-to-knee contact. He goes down. They get the spot shows them like a half a yard short on the first down. On the third down play, and then the quarterback has to leave the game because of the injury. They call a timeout thinking that they can put him back in the game, which they can't, so they burn a second timeout. And then not inexplicably, but nowadays these spread quarterbacks and spread teams can't take the ball under center anymore. They try to go from shotgun on a half-yard play instead of doing a quarterback sneak or a dive. They're doing an off-tackle run that gets stuffed, and that was the critical part of the game. That was what? I think the score at that point was, 21-20 or something like that? And that could have put them at least to where they had to score a touchdown if they kicked a field goal. And then Auburn made a great play. They were in field goal range, and instead of settling for the field goal, Bo Nix threw it up to their wide out, and he made a great play on the ball, and that was a touchdown, and all she wrote. Backdoor cover, man. It was just insanity.
Yeah, I mean, for you and I, we were each on the money line on opposite directions, so the touchdown pass at the end didn't really swing it for us because we were on the money line, but I know a lot of spread backers were just torn apart by that late touchdown pass.
Yeah, it was insanity, but it did stay under, and, you know, it also means, you know, the Ducks' defense is pretty good. I mean, we knew Auburn's defense was going to be good, but Oregon's going to be a pretty good team. That's just a tough loss because it kind of that eliminates them from the national picture, but pretty much, you know.
Yeah, and both teams that expended so much energy on Saturday night, I think they're going to be both in difficult spots this weekend going into week two.
Agreed. a couple bad losses I wanted to note, not to rub salt in the wounds for you, but Purdue losing field goal in the final seconds to Nevada. Oof, that was rough.
Yeah, a couple of bad fumbles by our outstanding wide receiver, Rondale Moore, didn't help. And really, there was just kind of bad turnover luck in that game. And I think that Purdue will bounce back pretty easily.
And the other one I want to note was, you know, Georgia State goes into Knoxville and beats the Vols like 38-30. I mean, wow, that Tennessee program is in disarray.
Yeah, I think the SEC East is one division this weekend that went up in flames. You also had Missouri that lost a game on the road to Wyoming.
True.
And they also had a South Carolina that lost against state rival North Carolina.
Maybe that's why Alabama doesn't play out of their conference too often.
That's a good point.
All right, just a few other notes from the weekend. USC did hang on to beat Fresno 31-23, but they did not cover, and they lose their quarterback, JT Daniels, in the first half, out for the year with an ACL meniscus tear. So they also have to go to a freshman in this Kadon Slovis. What do you know about this guy?
I know nothing about Kadon Slovis, but I was down on the Trojans before the season started, and I think it's going to be a really difficult road for them now. Hopefully, did you get in on that win total, or did you stay away from that one?
I did. Uh-oh. So I'll be sweating now. I mean, they got one win. Gotta get right. Five more.
At least they pulled that one out.
Yeah, it's tough when you lose the quarterback right away. You also show that some other key injuries. You've got Texas wideout Colin Johnson is you know, has a groin injury. He's questionable for the LSU game this weekend, so that's something to look at. South Carolina's quarterback, Jake Bentley, is out indefinitely with a foot injury. They are also turning to a lot of freshmen in play. Ryan, is it Helinski?
Yep, Ryan Helinski. I did read that he is a pro-style quarterback and a big, stocky guy, so I'm interested to see how he takes over this Gamecock team.
Yeah, well, they got to score more points than they did against North Carolina, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And the last one is, okay, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about Jalen Hurts. The dude went off, obviously. I mean, they were all like short passes, but he had six total touchdowns like through three quarters or something. It was insane.
Crazy output by Jalen Hurts, and he's kicking off his Heisman campaign, trying to make it 3 out of 3 for the Oklahoma Sooners.
He is. You know, but Houston hung tough enough. If you bet the spread, they did cover. I think it was like 23 or something. So they stuck 49-31. They stuck within the 23 to make that.
And the total was really interesting, too. I know a lot of sharps were hitting that under in like the 82, 83 range. And right. It ended up getting down to 80.5 where I got it. And then the game ended on 80.
I know. I saw some people on Twitter get 79.5 and got pissed, but
man,
that did get bet down quite a bit. That's where you got to look at that original number, the opening total, right?
Yep, exactly right. I think a lot of the sharps were in on that early and ended up with a winner there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what spots for week two? This is, you know, we've got some big games coming up. What do you like in week two?
Well, the first one that I had circled from the very beginning of the season was Missouri at home versus West Virginia. And it opened at 11, but now it's up to 14. And I still like Missouri here. I know they played really bad last weekend, but this Tigers team is a better team than they played last week. And this is really more of a play against West Virginia. Missouri lost at Wyoming last weekend, and they gave up 300 rushing yards in the process. Also had 3 turnovers, which didn't help their cause at all. But it was really the run defense that was poor. And I was looking at the Mountaineers box score from last weekend, and they put up a total of 34 rushing yards against FCS opponent James Madison. So I don't think they're going to be looking to take advantage of that rush defense for Missouri. And I think that they're going to bounce back and really look to open a can of whip ass on the Mountaineers.
After that loss at Wyo, yeah, they've got to win now, even though they're not bowl eligible and all. But, you know, they looked good for a while there in that Wyoming game. And then, you know, Wyo just took care of the ball and pounded down their throats. And the loss of Dana Holgorsen as the coach in West Virginia is going to show this year. And West Virginia is going to be a oft-bet-against team this year.
I think that's right.
All right, the next game you've got is big marquee game, Texas A&M. They're getting 17.5 points at Clemson. You know, Clemson's a juggernaut. We've talked about how they should be covering in the first half, but you like the Aggies here getting the 17.5 points.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of value here with Texas A&M. They played really well last weekend. Mm-hmm. I thought that their game was very impressive against Texas State, a team that I thought was going to hang in it a little bit more. And last year, Kellen Mond really showed off well against this Clemson defense, and they posted over 500 yards of total offense, and 430 of that was passing through Kellen Mond. So I know that Clemson is going to be down a little bit defensively this year, and although they played well against Georgia Tech, I think that Texas A&M is going to be able to keep this game within the number. So I grabbed the value, and it's a little bit over that key number of 17 as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this in the preview. I think the Aggies kind of got the short end of the stick on the schedule side. They're a good football team, and they were pretty good last year, and they almost beat Clemson last year. So I do like this spot. Originally, when we discussed this spot, or at least looked at it initially, I was scared for them, but 17.5 is a great number, so I'm with you on that. I might even put that one in.
All right. Maybe we can put that in when we get to Vegas on Friday night.
That's right. That's right. One I like is Miami at North Carolina. Now, we kind of touched on it a little bit. North Carolina, they basically shocked the world and beating the Gamecocks, fellow Carolina rival there. And I believe Mac Brown was the difference. I mean, you saw him dancing in the locker room afterwards.
Yeah.
I just believe that he is a legit coach, and they've always had good talent there, just underachieved. And I know that Miami, they hung tough against Florida, but a lot of that was Florida mistakes. So I'll take 6 points in the Tar Heels in this one.
I like that spot. I mean, North Carolina played really well last weekend with that upset win over South Carolina. Although Miami does have the bye in their back pocket, being off last weekend after playing in week zero,
true,
which is the only caveat I would say there. But North Carolina plus 6 points, I think that's a good play.
Yeah. And we're on opposite ends of the spectrum here. LSU at Texas is probably the marquee game of the weekend. LSU did look like a juggernaut with your boy Joe Burrow just tearing it up. Texas, of course, they handled their business against Louisiana Tech. Now they're going to be in Austin. That's why I'm on Texas. Tom Herman is renowned for his underdog spots, especially at home, and I like the 4.5 points. You're saying the over 52.5 because, well, I said that because the both teams scored like champs, mm-hmm, on us on Saturday. So what's your take on this action?
I do like that angle of going over, and actually I think that if you wait this out a little bit, you might be able to get a better number. I'm looking at the board now, and it's 5.5 everywhere and a,
ooh,
6 at,
sweet,
5 dimes. So
keep pushing it up.
Maybe wait till Saturday morning. You could get that one in, but I'm kicking myself. This thing opened up at 3.5 on Sunday afternoon, and I really, mm-hmm, wanted to bet it, but I was holding out for 3, and it obviously looks like it's never going to return. So
right.
I may look at playing LSU on the money line in this spot, but okay, I was going to wait until Saturday and see what it looks like at that time.
I gotcha. Smart move. We are on opposite sides of one. Another game, Army getting 23 points at Michigan. You like Michigan in this one.
I do, yeah. Michigan really kind of sleptwalked through their game last weekend, and I expected them to really open up the offense a little bit more. And they had an early turnover, which didn't help things at all. And Army really was kind of pedestrian in their game, right, last week. And I think that Michigan is going to be able to stop that Army rushing attack. They really didn't show much offensively last week, and I expect that Michigan's, mm-hmm, defense is going to likely shut them out. And I think they'll be able to cover this 23 rather easily.
Okay. I mean, my biggest take is that we know Army is one of those teams that just kind of grinds the game, mm-hmm, to a halt. So I just think 23 points may be a lot, even though Michigan, I've heard about this offense being better. They didn't necessarily play better the other day, and their defense actually gave up some points. So, you know, 23 just seems like a big number to me. I may not actually bet this one. I just kind of identify it as a possible one.
Yeah, I mean, total of 47. So that right there tells you it's, yep, going to be a lower scoring game, and that's a big number to cover in a game with 47 total points.
Exactly. How about your last one? You like an overplay with Hawaii. This seems like a common theme with you.
Yeah. These two teams can score and score and score. Last week, Hawaii posted 45 points against Arizona, and then Oregon State's defense gave up 52 at Oklahoma State. So I think that this game is prime for points, and it's going to be the late game on Saturday night in Hawaii. And in all likelihood, this number is probably going to keep rising between now and late Saturday night.
I do believe those 52 points were at Oregon State last week.
Oh, was it a home game? Yeah.
Yes. It was in Corvallis, man. Oklahoma State goes up there and puts up 52. I mean, that's insanity. Can you imagine, like, your opening game of the season, you're just watching. It's like a track meet out there.
Yeah, Oregon State's a pretty bad team, but they can score as well on the other side of the ball. I think they put up 35 themselves last weekend against Oklahoma State. So.
All right, well, let's jump into our NFC conference preview. This is the back end of what we started last week with the special edition. We want to jump right through the conferences. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, we did this for the AFC. We'll cover each team's title odds, you know, NFC odds in this case, their division odds, and then their win totals with some notes. We'll start off with the NFC East and the Eagles. They are plus 1,200 to win the title, plus 600 to win the NFC, minus 150 to win the East, and then 10.5 wins is their total, shaded to the under minus 130, plus 110 on the over. What are your thoughts about the Eagles' action?
Well, I mean, this team starts and ends with their quarterback, Carson Wentz.
Yep.
He did not carry them to the Super Bowl because he was hurt that year, and then he came back a little bit early last season and was clearly not 100% with the knee injury. So I've been reading that his knee is probably back and looking like it's stronger than ever, but he does also have this little back injury that keeps popping up, and that is one thing that does concern me a little bit because, as you know, they lost Nick Foles in the offseason, and they no longer have that security blanket for him.
They did pick up McCown, though, right? So he's the backup, I believe, Josh McCown. True. So he's a veteran backup. That's solid. However, I agree with you. Wentz is the difference maker, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not on board with this team as much as others. I've heard a lot of sharps betting the Super Bowl odds because it's a pretty good number. They've got a great defense. We know that their coaching is very solid. They haven't lost that much talent. They lost some guys. You've noted Chris Long, Golden Tate, Elodie Nada, and Jordan Matthews besides Foles. But they picked up some guys. I mean, Deshaun Jackson's back. They drafted Miles Sanders at running back. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and then the Chicago Bears' Jordan Howard. You know, this is going to be a really good team, and I think that they're going to be right at top of the East with the Cowboys. Again, though, they lose Wentz. I don't know. They've been bailed out twice with Foles. I don't know if McCown could do it.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to say, too, last season they really just had poor injury luck. They were 31st in overall team health, and I think that there's a good chance that's going to regress back towards the mean this year, and likely they'll be healthier. And on top of that, too, they're facing against the second easiest schedule in the league this season. And specifically, their opposing run defense is second easiest schedule as well. So they've got some good backs there, the rookie Miles Sanders out of Penn State. And I think that they are going to have a lot of success on that side of the ball, provided that Wentz can stay healthy.
Right. I do think they're going to win the division, but the Super Bowl stuff is big talk. We'll see.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
The next team is the Cowboys. They're plus 2,200 as of right now to win the title, plus 1,000 to win the NFC, plus 200 for the East. Their total's 9 wins, shaded pretty heavily to the under, minus 130, plus 120 to the over. I noted that I already hit this over 9 because I expect Zeke to play. Now, I put week 1. I think we talked before the podcast. I guess he came to the Dallas airport, so he's in Dallas. Oh, my God, you know. But he is going to play or be ready to play week 1, we'll see. They're playing the Giants. I do like that win total, though. 9's pretty low, and I guess people were just hitting that for Zeke. I'm not really sure. This defense is legit. And, yes, they play the first-place schedule, but I don't know. I think they're actually going to be better. They have that change at offensive coordinator with Kellen Moore. I think the offense is going to open up, and I think Dak Prescott can make the difference to Amari Cooper in the game. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, Kellen Moore is definitely a plus for this team. He is going to bring a little bit of innovation to the offense, and I think that it's really going to help Dak become a more efficient passer. And you mentioned it, too, as soon as Amari Cooper was added to this offense in the middle of last season, it really took another step up. And if Zeke actually comes back and joins this team, they could be really good on offense. They also added a few defenders, Robert Quinn and Christian Covington, to this team, to an already awesome defense. And I know Sean Lee is kind of oft injured, but they've got a few other linebackers. I know your boy Leighton Vander Esch and
that's my guy.
And Jalen Smith in there is really the leader on this defense. So I do agree with you. I think the Cowboys are going to be darn good, and they have a pretty easy schedule against opposing rush defenses. So Zeke does come back, and I know they drafted a rookie out of Memphis, Tony Pollard, who a lot of people are excited about as well.
This team is really talented. I saw a tweet today, didn't verify it, but I'm going to take it for gospel. They have 10 first-round picks on this team. That's really good. That's a lot of talent on this team. So as much as Jerry Jones has been a little crazy in the past, he's actually had his guys assemble a pretty damn good team. And the only thing that pushes me off about winning the division is that a team has not won back-to-back titles in this division in like 10 years. So it's really hard to win back-to-back titles, but they're a dark horse even if they make it as a wild card. And I have them in the playoffs for sure. All right, then the two other teams in this division are, you know, we have to talk about them. First, it's the Giants. They're plus 8,000 to win the title, plus 3,300 to win the NFC, plus 1,000 to win the East. Their total is 6 wins, shaded to the under minus 125, plus 105 to the over. You've noted an interesting prop, though. Daniel Jones, who we know probably won't start week one. I don't think he's starting. He's you can get him at plus 3,300 to lead the NFL in interceptions. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. I can't take credit for originating this one. I definitely heard it on VSiN, but year over year, it's a rookie quarterback who, and not every year, but rookie quarterbacks are high on the interception charts. And presuming that Eli Manning gets the yank early on in this season, which I do think is going to happen, they're going to go to Daniel Jones early, and there's a decent chance that he's going to throw a lot of interceptions. So I saw some value there, and I hopped on it.
That's right. I mean, this team, they traded OBJ and Olivier Vernon in the offseason to get a guard, Kevin Zeitler, and Jabril Peppers. When I look at this roster, they just don't have a lot of talent. And, you know, they've got Golden Tate they picked up, but he got hit for PEDs. He's gone for 4 games. It's kind of nuts, I mean, how bad this team is on paper. So I'm kind of surprised. I heard on VSiN that a lot of sharps are hitting the over for the win total, but I just can't get on board with that. I don't think this is a very good football team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm probably not going to be playing any futures with this team, and I will be looking to fade them week in and week out, I'm sure.
That's right. The Redskins are the last team in this division, and they get no love, plus 15,000 for the title, plus 8,000 for the NFC, still plus 1,000 for the division. They have 6.5 wins, at least when I pull it for the total, but it's heavily shaded to the under, minus 210, plus 175 to the over. You've got a prop that Haskins could lead the league in interceptions at plus 1,600.
Yeah, this is another rookie that I saw on the list that I jumped on with Haskins at 1,600. I think that he is going to probably start a lot of games too. Case Keenum is the incumbent quarterback right now, but I don't expect that he's going to be in there for very long, and I think Haskins will get the nod probably before the first half of the season's over.
Yeah, I agree. He's going to. It's interesting because they actually had a team that was competing early in the season last year, but I think Alex Smith is part of that. He's just kind of one of those low-mistake quarterbacks that keeps you in games, and the defense was okay. Once they turn to, even Keenum takes too many risks, you know, for that kind of approach. Mm-hmm. So I hear you. And, I mean, they do get Darius Geis back at running back. That should help them. I thought they made a good pick in Montez Sweat in the first round of defensive lineman out of Mississippi State. But they had a lot of work to do, and I don't see them doing much in this division.
Yeah, I agree. Their offensive line is going to be subpar as well, which is not going to help any of these quarterbacks play well this season.
Okay, well, let's move on to the NFC North. We'll start off with the beloved, my beloved, the Bears. The Bears are plus 1,200 to win the title, plus 700 to win the NFC, plus 200. Actually, I think that's changed, but I'll list it. Plus 200 to win the North. 9 wins are the total, but it's shaded to the over, minus 135, plus 115 to the under. Again, you know, I heard these sharps on VSiN talking about playing that plus money to the under, which kind of bothered me. I'm like, come on. So they have, to me, they do have a tougher schedule. That's why I don't have them winning this division. But I do have them in the playoffs because I think that defense is just, it's as good as it gets. I'm not sure about your thoughts, Action.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in agreement with the Sharps. They lost a lot on defense, too. Vic Fangio, their defensive coordinator, is gone, and in comes Chuck Pagano. Right. And I think the biggest loss is going to be that Bryce Callahan, the defensive back who played the nickel last season.
Yeah, he was nickel corner. Mm-hmm.
They did bring in Buster Skrien to fill that spot, but I'm not sure he's going to be quite the same player. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you hit on it already. 2 years ago in 2017, they played the league's toughest schedule. And last year, it was completely flipped. They played the second easiest schedule in the league, which likely led to a few of those wins in that 12-4 record. And out of their first five opponents last year, four of the coaches were fired before the end of the season. So that tells you what their schedule was like. And again, they flipped this year and they're playing one of the toughest schedules in the league. So they do play a pretty soft schedule of opposing pass defenses. Mm-hmm. So I think that Nagy and Trubisky may have some success, but on the other side, the run defense is a very tough schedule for them.
Right. Yeah, obviously we need Mitch to progress in Chicago for them to really reach any heights, but I just look at it that essentially if they can defend their home field for most of the time, maybe go 6-2, and then they win, you know, three. See, to me, the number nine, maybe they hit the number nine. You know what I mean? Hit the under 8-8. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It's a big drop. But, I mean, if I guess it's plus money, you could take the shot. But I still see this team winning 10 wins. But we'll see what happens. The next team is the Packers. They're actually plus 1,600 to win the title, plus 800 to win the NFC, plus 200 for – I guess this has changed a little bit. But plus, I have it plus 200 for the division. They're at 9.5 wins, shaded to the under minus 140, plus 120 for the over. They've had quite a few changes. Obviously, they bring in a guy who you like to say he shook Sean McVay's hand, he went and became an offensive coordinator in Tennessee. You know, they weren't like world beaters, and now he's the head coach in Green Bay. What do you think about that guy?
Yeah, this is going to be a very interesting team to follow this year. Not only that, they have a new offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett, too, which you may remember came from Jacksonville.
Yes.
And the defense is year in and year out underperforming. Last year, they were middle of the road, and Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator, couldn't really seem to turn it around. And now this year, they've lost a few key contributors. Clay Matthews is gone, and the cornerback, Breshad Breeland. They do bring in a few good players through the draft, although I've read that Rashawn Gary, the linebacker out of Michigan, has not played well in the preseason. So I'm down on this team a little bit this year. Outside of Aaron Rodgers and that offense, I think they're going to be good, obviously. But I think that the Packers could be a little bit pedestrian this season.
It's interesting. I guess mine is kind of more of a global approach. LaFleur has to be better than McCarthy. That's the way I look at it.
True.
McCarthy was stuck in an offense that was good 10 years ago, and he never really evolved. He took over the play calling at one point, and it was so predictable. I think that LaFleur is – I don't think he should be his head coach, but he's going to have more innovative offense. Rodgers should have a big year, and then the defense just has to stay healthy and play decent for them to win games. And they have the benefit of an easier schedule than the Bears. So that's why I haven't won in division. I'm not betting on it, but I do think that they're going to be good enough to win 10 games.
Wow.
But this is one of those divisions that we've got three teams that are very even, almost dead even.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why, kind of like when I looked at your AFC South at one point, whoever is the best quarterback is going to win. That's the way I looked at it at the time, you know, with Luck. Of course, he dropped out. That's why I think Rodgers will win more games than Mitch, and that's going to put them over the top. We'll talk about the Vikings now because it rolls right into it. The third team is the Vikings in this division. They've plus 2,500 to win the title, plus 1,200 to win the NFC, also plus 200 to win the division. Nine wins is their total, shaded to the under, actually shaded to the over minus 115, minus 105 for the under. This is a team that's really solid. They're really good, and they really suffered from the tougher schedule last year. The game or two that knocked them out of the playoffs was because they played everybody tougher. And this year they get a benefit of a slightly easier schedule. I do think the other key factor with the Vikings is Kevin Stefanski, who took over as the offensive coordinator last year when they got John DeFilippo out there, was calling 70% pass plays or 75% or something. Plus they brought in Kubiak as like a special consultant to the offense. We know he's a run-first, play-action guy. So even though Cousins had a pretty good year statistically, he just was chucking the ball too much, and it really hurt the defense because if they didn't get those big plays, the defense was tired out on the field a lot and against better teams that worked them. So I see this team right in the mix as well. 9 wins is a perfect total for them. It's really going to boil down to those kind of late game action with these three teams and who's going to come out on top. I think you could have three teams at the end of the year right in that 8 or 9 win mark for the last couple of weeks, and it'll be duked out on the field.
Yeah, this is going to be really fascinating. Comes down to the last 2 weeks. They do get both Green Bay and Chicago at home the last 2 weeks of the season this year. So in all likelihood, the division's going to come down to those two games. And I do really like this Vikings team this year. Last year, one of the big drawbacks of them was that offensive line play. They were really poor last year, and they couldn't keep Kirk Cousins clean. They did lose a few players off this team from last year, including few linemen, Mike Remmers and both Nick Easton were lost, but they really tried to address that need in the draft and through the free agency. They picked up a few players, Dakota Dozier and Josh Klein, and then a center, Garrett Bradbury from NC State in the first round of the draft. And I think that the offensive line is certainly going to be improved, and that's going to help keep Kirk Cousins clean. And I do think, like you mentioned, they're going to try and focus on the run a little bit. Dalvin Cook, and they also added the running back out of Boise State, Alex Mattison. And I like this team. I think that they have a good chance to win this division, especially with that easier schedule.
So they probably provide the most value. I don't know. We have them all at plus 200 for the division. Right. But I would imagine at some point you can look at that in season and probably they're not going to be as bet up as high. I think the Packers are kind of one of those darlings for the nation, and then the Bears are big city that gets followed, and there's a lot of Bear fans, so maybe the Vikings have some value later. Solid squad.
Sure is.
The last team is the Lions. I don't want to just gloss over this team, but the title is plus 8,000. The NFC is plus 4,000, plus 900 to win the division. 6.5 wins is their total, shaded to the over, minus 140, and then plus 120 for the under. I did note this team may be getting a little bit better. I know that I've kind of dogged them in my article that I wrote on Wegspool.com, but their defense should be pretty solid. I mean, they have Snacks Harrison in there. You know, they picked up Trey Flowers for the defensive line. And it sounds like they're switching more to a run approach, kind of a play action pass type thing. Kerryon Johnson will be toting the rock. And I like that they picked up TJ Hawkinson from Iowa. But I still think they're just a cut below the other three teams in the division.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a easier level of schedule. Their schedule is grading out to be much easier against pass defenses and also run defenses this year, which I think will bode well for Kerryon Johnson in that offense. But you're right, there was quite a bit of turnover as well, especially on the defensive side where they lost Ziggy Ansah. They did get a few aging veterans on the other side, CJ Anderson and Danny Amendola come in. But I'm with you, it's going to be difficult for them to really compete at the top level of this division.
All right, well, let's move on to the next division, the NFC South. The Saints are the top dog there. They're plus 800 to win the title, plus 450 to win the NFC. They're minus 150 to win the South. 10.5 wins is their total, shaded to the under, minus 130, plus 110 to the over. You know, I noted that really it's kind of the same team as last year. I mean, they obviously had two great drafts in a row, so that helps. They really just kind of swap out Latavius Murray for Mark Ingram in the backfield, Jared Cook for Ben Watson at tight end position. You've got that they lost Okafor and then Max Unger, but I believe they drafted a center, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So what do you see about the Saints? I mean, they should still be really good. Obviously, Breeze, he kind of tailed off at the end of last year.
Yeah, I think that the evidence shows that he may have gotten hurt late in the season. His shoulder was obviously not the same after week 11 or 12, and he really couldn't get the ball down the field. And I've been reading that he is back and he's going to be fully healthy this season. So as a fantasy owner of him, I hope that they keep him in the game more and they don't do any of that bullshit backup quarterback, I don't know, Taysom Hill offense.
Right.
But, I mean, the other big loss is Mark Ingram. I don't really think that Latavius Murray is the same player as Mark Ingram, and I'm interested to see how that works out for this offense. They also lost their passing game coordinator, Joe Brady, to Ed O and LSU, and I think that Sean Payton was pretty displeased when that happened. So that may affect this offense. Kind of a sneaky loss that no one's really talking about. But I do think that they're the class of this division, and obviously they have a few burrs in their saddle from that loss last year in the NFC Championship.
Yeah, that's the narrative for me. They were two steps away 2 years ago with the dreadful loss of Minneapolis Miracle. Then obviously they changed the rules for the pass interference thing against the Rams. So maybe it's this year, but we'll see. I mean, they got to win in the division three times in a row in the NFC South is no picnic. It's a tough division.
That's true. Very difficult to do, especially when you're playing against that number one schedule.
That's right. Well, the next team is the Falcons. They're plus 2,800 to win the title, plus 1,400 to win the NFC, plus 350 to win the division. 8.5 wins is their total, shaded to the over, minus 115, minus 105 to the under. I've written that this is kind of the division dark horse. A lot of people are talking them up. I'm not betting them to win the division, but I would not be surprised if they did for a couple reasons. One, their defense was annihilated by like week two last year. You know, they just had nobody on defense. They had five or six starters that they lost. So it's almost like they picked up free agents, you know, offseason to get them back. They also swapped out. Dirk Koetter comes back, who was the coordinator before he went down to Tampa. And you get Sark out of there. And Sark did better last year than he did 2 years ago. But Koetter was the interplay with him and Ryan that was probably one of Ryan's best years when he was the offensive coordinator last time. So they're going to be really good. I mean, their offensive line was struggled last year. They addressed that in the draft. So this could be the team that does it out of this group, but I don't know about your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, they have a couple of losses, too. One in particular I think could sting is the backup Tevin Coleman running back. I mean,
sure.
Devontae Freeman hasn't really proven that he can stay healthy throughout an entire season, and now their backup running back is Irv Smith and, I guess, KenJohn Barner. So that really is kind of a question mark for me, but I do like the upgrade they made at that offensive line. I think that's going to go a long way. And I know you mentioned it, the injuries this team sustained last year, which is absolutely killer. I think they lost so many linebackers and secondary players that they just couldn't compete on that side of the ball. And that really took the steam off this team. I do see that they're listed as underdogs in 9 out of the 16 games this season. So certainly a team that I'm going to be interested in backing week in and week out in that underdog role, but I'm probably staying away from the futures market.
I did hear a stat that I believe they play 11 of their 16 games in a dome this year. So that always helps. So we'll see how that plays out, because Matt Ryan and the gang usually play better in the dome than they do cold in like Chicago or something. So.
Right. Yeah, no doubt.
All right, the next team are the Panthers. They're plus 3,300 to win the title, plus 2,000 to win the NFC, plus 450 to win the South. They have an 8-win total. It's shaded the over, minus 125, plus 105 in the under. What are your thoughts on the Carolina Panthers, Nation?
Well, I mean, this one begins and ends with the health of Cam Newton.
Right.
I know that he picked up another little injury a few weeks ago in the preseason, and it sounds like he's going to be ready to go here in week one. But I'm going to be watching that without a doubt. They did lose quite a bit on the offensive side of the ball. Devin Funchess is gone. They lost KenJohn Barner, a couple of offensive linemen, including Matt Khalil. But they did bring in Matt Paradis, the center, is one of the high-priced free agencies this season, and a few offensive linemen in the draft as well. So I'm interested to see how they shape up on that side of the ball. Their defense has always been solid, and I know that head coach Ron Rivera really prides himself in their defense, so I expect that they're going to be good again this year. I think that win total is set right, though, right at 8 wins.
Yeah, I have a bad feeling about this team, and I'm not sure why exactly, but obviously if Cam is hurt, this team's not good. They did add some talent, got Gerald McCoy on a one-year deal, Bruce Irvin on a one-year deal, and they did draft Brian Burns from Florida State, so they've got some talent coming in. I just have a feeling that Riverboat Ron has always been one of those guys that has kind of pushed the envelope, but also been on the edge of getting fired. And last year, I think he kind of lost this team. I'm not sure what happened, but they lost their last like 5 games in a row. And I'm not saying it's going to continue into this year. However, you know, they lost Thomas Davis, one of their leaders. They kind of are aging a little bit on that defense. I would go under this total if I was betting, mainly because the division's tough. And I just feel like there's something missing. And I know that McCaffrey's been good and Cam with North Turner and all that. But obviously, if Cam gets hurt, then they're toast. But I just don't feel like this is the same team that went to the Super Bowl, like, what is it, 4 years ago now?
Yeah. They do have a pretty tough schedule, too. They are slated to face off against the NFL's second toughest schedule of passing offenses. So the defense really has their work cut out for them. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be right there, but I'm staying away from it personally.
The last team in the division are the Buccaneers, plus 8,000 to win the title, plus 4,000 to win the NFC, plus 900 to win the South. Their win total is 6.5, shaded to the under, minus 120, plus 100 for the over. To me, this is, again, I'm not all in on the Bucs or anything, but I just think they're going to have a professional coach in there. Bruce Arians is a stud. Dirk Cutter, I got to be honest with you, was one of the worst coaches in the league. He was like bottom four for 4 years, 3 years, whenever he's in, on top. And I think that Arians will coach this team. People will listen to him. He's going to get Jameis to play as good as he's able to do. We'll see if he turns the ball over like he usually does. But I don't know if this team has the talent that they did before, you know, when they got rid of Deshaun Jackson and all this other stuff. But this team could probably surprise people, and especially on a week-to-week basis, like in week one. I'm going to look for this team to be definitely underdog play, maybe even some money lines in division, because I think that they're going to be underestimated.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I think the big positive from this team is bringing in Bruce Arians. One difference this year, though, is he won't be calling plays. He's turned that over to offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich, which does give me a little bit of pause, because I know Bruce is really the mastermind behind all of those Arizona offenses.
Right.
But you're right. The key is going to be able to have Jameis not throw those interceptions that he's prone to do the last several years. If they can avoid those big turnovers, I think that this team is poised to have a good team on offense. And when you look at the defense, they brought in some serious heavy hitters. And Ndamukong Suh came in from L.A. They brought in Shaq Barrett, the outside linebacker, and the first-round pick. LSU linebacker Devin White is a stud.
Yeah, he's a stud.
So I think this defense is going to be pretty scary and a little bit underrated. I'm right there with you. I like this win total over 6.5. You do have to lay a little bit of juice. Oh, I guess it is even money on the over.
Even money.
But I'm with you. I'm going to look to bet them week in and week out, and I think they are going to be one of our first picks in the circuit contest.
That's right. No preview. All right, let's go over our last division before we get into those circa picks. We got the NFC West. The Rams are plus 1,200 to win the title, plus 600 to win the NFC. They're the heavy minus 150 favorite to win the West. 10 wins is their total, pretty heavily shaded to the under at minus 120, plus 100 for the over. You've listed that they're actually at minus 116, I guess, for the under. Sorry about that. I guess that's changed. Their key losses... They lost Zach Taylor to Cincinnati. What are they going to do without him, the quarterback coach? But they did lose Ndamukong Suh and Joyner, the linebacker. But they get Clay Matthews, an experienced pass rusher, Weddle's at safety. They drafted Daryl Henderson to back up Gurley, who obviously missed the end of the year, basically, and Taylor Rapp at safety. What do you think about the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously Super Bowl runners-up, and they have a good team. They have some losses, and Ndamukong Suh is gone. They lost the guard, Roger Saffold, as well, who's going to be difficult to replace. But I really don't see this team winning 10 games, and I am expecting them to take that Super Bowl hangover, much like teams do year in and year out. And I bet this one under 10. I think you're right. I got it 116, but it is 120 now, and I still like it at that number.
It's interesting. I know that people said that, and it does make sense. That's usually what happens, save the Patriots. I don't know. This team is so talented, and McVay is a different cat. And I think that hopefully he learned in the Super Bowl what he needs to do. And then Jared Goff, I mean, really rests on, can he take another step? Because he sucked in the Super Bowl. That's why they lost. I mean, so I'm not going to bet the win total, but I still think they win this division. And I know we'll discuss your division pick in a minute. But we'll see. I mean, a lot of people are down on them, and they're down on week one at Carolina, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that Carolina is another sneaky play that you and I had talked about in week one. Really, the other big question mark is Todd Gurley and his health.
Yeah.
He was the workhorse back of this team, and it was clear towards the end of last season that he could not carry the load anymore, and they brought in C.J. Anderson. So Daryl Henderson is a good player, and I'm interested to see how that backfield shakes out as this team goes on this season.
See what happens. All right, the Seahawks, I've listed as the second team. They're plus 2,500 to win the title, plus 1,200 to win the NFC, plus 250 to win the division. Mind you, these are all numbers before the big trade, so they might have shifted a bit. Mm-hmm. Their total was 8.5 wins before the trade. Looks like it was shaded to the under, minus 140, and maybe over, plus 120. I have to check those numbers. But kind of shocked the world in this big trade for Jadeveon Clowney this weekend, who really helps to step in to take place of Frank Clark, who left in the offseason. And then they also did lose Earl Thomas and Doug Baldwin as well. What do you think about the Seahawk trade? This is pretty big for them.
Mm-hmm. I really like the Seahawks this year, and I like them even more now that they brought Clowney in from Houston. Russell Wilson is one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and they're going to go as high as he takes them this season. And Pete Carroll is an excellent coach as well. Brian Schottenheimer did a good job last year at the offensive coordinator position, and they really kind of shifted their once pass-happy offense to a completely running-heavy offense. Rashad Penny at the running back position is a good player, and I do like Seattle. And in fact, I've changed my tune. I think they're going to win this division now instead of San Francisco.
Oh, look at this guy. Well, I'm looking at their futures. It looks like it hasn't changed that much. In fact, the title odds went down, but it's interesting they went down from when I originally put this in. But look, Seahawks are tough. I think last year Pete Carroll really showed me something with coaching that young group to get to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I do like Russell Wilson. I love his wife more. CR, it's amazing. But nice. But I don't know, man. Like, there's something missing with this team. Can they beat the Rams? They lost two incredible games last year. We'll see. Playing out on the field, you know. So the next team is the 49ers. I thought this was your darling team. I had them at plus 2,800 to win the title, plus 1,400 to win the NFC, plus 450 to win the West. 8 wins is their season total. Shaded to the over, minus 125, plus 105 for the under. Well, now you're off the 49ers. You're all about the 49ers when we talked earlier.
Yeah, I really am just not sure that Jimmy G is the guy to take him to the promised land.
Yeah.
And I know that Kyle Shanahan is supposed to be this brilliant offensive mind, and I still think that he is, but I'm just not sold that he's cut out to be a head coach of a football team. Mm. He is so stubborn that he won't let go of play calling duties. And on top of all that, they have a very tough schedule this year. They face off inside the division. They have to play the AFC North, just like the rest of this division does. But I think that they're going to be down a little bit.
Okay. I would agree with you. I think the Jimmy G looked terrible in the preseason. Now, that means nothing, right? But at the same time, he should have probably got more reps. He looked so bad. They did get some, you know, they got Nick Bosa, obviously, first pick. They got Dee Ford and Quan Alexander and Tevin Coleman in the offseason. So, I mean, they've definitely upgraded their talent, but I don't know about this team. Like, I originally had them in the playoffs. I did. And then I looked at the schedule again, and I'm like, look, if Jimmy G can't come through in the clutch, they're going to lose a lot of close games. And, you know, the division is difficult, and they're not going to be this, you know. I thought that, you know, when they came off of last year, 2 years ago, the end of the season, they rolled the last 5 or 6 games with Jimmy G, and then, of course, he had his injury early last year. I just thought that they were going to be really good last year, and very disappointing. So I'm kind of on that same tip, and they got to show me something before I'm going to bet on them.
Mm-hmm. I do think they're going to be a very good running team. They face off against the easiest opposing schedule of run defenses this year. So they brought in Tevin Coleman. They had Matt Breida, who played well last season. And then Jerick McKinnon, who hasn't been able to stay on the field. But I think this team could really do some damage on the ground. And maybe that could mitigate some of the Garoppolo shortcomings.
Right, for sure. It'll help them out for sure. All right, the last team doesn't have a very big chance for big success are the Cardinals. Plus 10,000 to win the Super Bowl, plus 5,000 to do the NFC, plus 1,600 in the West. Their total's 5.5 wins, severely shaded to the under, minus 145, plus 125 for the over. You've actually got their under at minus 130, okay. So did you bet that?
Yeah, that was several weeks ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's face it. Cliff Kingsbury got fired in college and he gets a pro coaching job. I don't know how that happens. I just don't. But more importantly, I look at this team. They have a bunch of old vets that they got on one-year deals and rookies. Mm-hmm. And those teams usually don't do crap. You know what I mean? And Kyler Murray, I'm actually a naysayer against him, so I'm hoping he proves me wrong. I just don't think he has it. I think his both size and his elusiveness isn't going to matter when the line stinks. He's just going to get hammered, and he's just so small. But maybe I'm wrong, but we'll see what happens. Kingsbury's attack, we'll see if it works in the NFL. And I think that they're only going to win like 3 games, but that's just me.
Yeah, I really do love this win total under. And I think that you hit it right on the head. Cliff Kingsbury is the place to start. Really kind of a bizarre coaching move when it comes down to it. And Kyler Murray is going to be electric, and I'm sure he's going to be really fun to watch week in and week out, but I'm not sure that he's going to carry this team to very many wins. And on the other side of the ball, I think, is where their biggest weakness is. Their defense is going to be just terrible this year.
Right.
They lost so many players on that side of the ball. And I think that they're going to be playing in a lot of games where they're way behind, and Kyler Murray may rack up plenty of fantasy points, but I don't think they're going to rack up many victories. In fact, they're set up to be underdogs in 15 out of their 16 games, and that last one is a pick 'em.
Awful.
And it starts out in week 1 where they're home underdogs to the Detroit Lions of all teams.
I know. That's not a good sign. Do you think that they're going to be a team that's going to be an overplay team because it's just a score fest?
I do. Yeah, I'm going to be looking to play this team over in a lot of games. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. Okay, well, let's just do real quick predictions for the Super Bowl before we jump into the Circa contest decisions. I'll go first. I actually think Kansas City's going to win it this year. I know that that's not crazy, but you know, got to get past New England. But I think that the Chiefs have done enough to shore up the defense. They got a better defensive coordinator. Of course, the elite offense and the MVP coming back at quarterback. I think it's not a popular pick. I think they're going to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl. I know a lot of people pick the Eagles, or even the Cowboys might be a good decision there. But I think the Chiefs are going to roll this year. That's my pick.
Wow, I like it. Kansas City and Andy Reid is certainly a good coach. You have that going for you. I'm going to go on the other side of the league with a coach that is less acclaimed. And Jason Garrett and the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow, you're going to go with the boys, huh? The clapper.
I really think that this team is set up this year to do some serious damage. They really kind of benefit from having Dak Prescott on that rookie deal still.
Yep.
And it allows them to spread money around to the other positions on the team. Their offensive line is going to be back and better than ever. And assuming Zeke gets his contract here in the next couple of days, I think that he's going to run like a man possessed. And we already talked about how good their defense is going to be. So I'm hoping that Jason Garrett can overcome those deficiencies and bring this team to the promised land, and Jerry Jones can get one more Super Bowl.
How about them Cowboys? Well, I actually like your pick, definitely from a value standpoint. And look, I'm not anti-Cowboy. I like the Cowboys. They're always fun. And man, Jason Garrett, though. Wow. I mean, hopefully it doesn't boil down to a close game where the clapper is going to make a decision.
True. Maybe Kellen Moore can start making those decisions.
Exactly. Do you have an idea on the AFC, like the Chiefs or what?
I do like your pick. I think the Chiefs are going to be right there. I think the Steelers are going to be good this season, and you obviously can't go away from the Patriots. So in my mind, it's one of those three teams. If I had to make a pick today, it would be the Steelers.
Mm-hmm. You get the value there. I like that too. I do like the Steelers to definitely win their division and be there. So we'll see.
How about you? Do you have a pick in the NFC?
NFC's Rams. I got the Rams. I know it's not popular. I may be able to be dissuaded to the Cowboys because of the value, but I just think the Rams have the best roster. I think that the Saints are right there too, but I think they're going to take a little bit of a step, and their division's better this year overall. Like maybe not – they might not have a super contender – Atlanta, I think, can knock them off, but I think the Panthers are taking a step back and the Bucs are coming up. So it's going to be one of those things. If the Saints have to go on the road and play at the Rams or the Bears or the Cowboys, it's a very different game than playing in New Orleans. So.
Without a doubt.
All right, well, let's jump into our new favorite segment, the Circa Contest Tête-à-Tête. We've identified six games that we're going to eventually figure out, maybe five of them that we like. It might be one off the board, but let's start off with one that you like. Baltimore is going to Miami. We know Miami's going to stink. They're 7-point favorites. Right now that's listed at minus 110 of that 7 points. Why do you like Baltimore and Miami?
Well, this is just purely a play on John Harbaugh. I think a lot of teams this season are going to go back the last few games of last year and look and see how Lamar Jackson and this running offense was put together, and they're going to come up with ways that they can stop him. And knowing John Harbaugh and how smart of a coach he is, I expect that he's going to have some wrinkles up his sleeve, especially in week one going against the Miami Dolphins. And I expect that they're going to run all over Miami and maybe even throw a few passes in there. And I think Baltimore is going to cover this game easily. I'm hoping that we can get a contest line under that touchdown, though.
Yeah, it did tick up. It was 6.5 just yesterday. So these aren't the formal official contest lines that we will see on Thursday. So we're kind of looking ahead at Bet Online and other shops to see what they're at. I agree. We want that key number to be under the 7 so we can grab that, but we'll see how it shakes out. I'm with you on that one. Sounds good. One we both like is our second one, and that's the Bills. They're getting 3 points at the Jets. You know, the Bills, that's minus 115 if you're betting online. Now, one of the reasons why I like this is that we talked about this in the preview last week. The Jets are getting a lot of love, a lot of hype. Not exactly sure why. People really like Sam Darnold. I think he's going to get better. But Adam Gase, he wasn't lighting the world on fire in Miami. And we both like Sean McDermott as the head coach of the Bills. And if Josh Allen can do a little bit more with his arm, hit some guys downfield, that running game and his elusiveness with that great defense, I think they can maybe win the game outright or at least stick within the field goal.
Yeah, to add to that, I think the trade of LeSean McCoy over the weekend, or sorry, the release of Sean McCoy was really a huge, huge benefit to this team. It was clear that they think they found something in the rookie Devin Singletary, and I expect that the Buffalo offense is going to be improved with the absence of LeSean McCoy.
That's right. And Frank Gore. Don't forget him.
Yeah, the aged one.
The ghost of Frank Gore, but he's still out there. Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting matchup. But this is the one I feel probably best about of all these that we've picked so far. The third one we've got is the 49ers are going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And right now, when we first looked at this, it was a pick 'em. Bet Online has shaded it to basically San Francisco's a road favorite at 1 point at minus 110. We like the Bucs. At least I like the Bucs here. I think Arians is going to show something here. Jimmy G hasn't been sharp, as we discussed, and that Bucs defense is slightly improved. I think the Bucs are going to win this game outright, and this will be one of the first of those Bruce Arian wins that we expect to see.
Yeah, I think that Bruce Arians has been chomping at the bit to get back into a real regular season game, and I am expecting him to come out with a pretty substantial game plan this weekend. I'm sure that Byron Leftwich will have a little hand in it. But as long as Jameis doesn't turn the ball over, I think that we'll be in good shape here. And I do agree, I like the Buccaneers, at least early on, looking at the numbers this week.
That's right. The next one I'm on, I know we're going to discuss it a little bit. That's why it's in this segment, is the Bengals are going to Seattle. This is the largest favorite currently on the board, where Seattle is laying 9.5 points, currently minus 108 on BetOnline. Look, there's a lot of favorites, heavy favorites at home this week, and I was trying to figure out which one we'd have to go with because we got to pick at least one, it looks like.
You think?
And yeah. And to me, it's to bet against Cincinnati. I mean, I just don't believe in this team. Their entire offensive line is questionable, meaning literally questionable. And then they've got, obviously, A.J. Green's going to miss the game. Their defense has kind of been eroded over time. That's what I'm going here. And I think Seattle's a pretty good ball club. You've had some interesting stats, though, on these big favorites in week one.
Yeah, an article I saw posted yesterday, since 1993, the biggest week one favorite, looking at every season, has gone only 12-23 against the spread. It's 34%. And it just goes to show you that maybe we don't know as much as we think about these teams in the first week. And favorites of 7 or more have gone 18-27, and favorites of 10 or more have gone 5-11 the last 16 years. So definitely gives me a little bit of pause in looking at this game. I'm obviously going to wait and see what the number looks like, but if it hits double digits, I would probably like to stay away. Mm-hmm. However, though, looking at the bet splits here, right now the Cincinnati Bengals are getting 52% of the wagers. So if we can end up on the lower side of that bet split, I may be intrigued to play something that's a little more contrarian here.
And normally speaking, you know, my betting philosophy is 7 points maximum. I'm not going to really go with a favorite that's over 7 points just because it's the NFL. Most of the games are within, probably the average has been like 3.5 points, I'd imagine, or less. So it's just hard to get on board with that. But again, it's like picking which leg to shoot me in, basically. You know, which one are we going to go with? And I think, you know, we could talk about other ones too. Another one that I like, hopefully you do too, the Broncos right now at Oakland. It looks like the Broncos are a 1 point favorite on the road now at -112. I just think Denver's going to be a more professional, solid football team. They've got a good defense with Fangio. They're going to play solid there. You're right about the statuesque Flacco, but I don't think the Raiders have the pass rush that we're worried about in this game. So I'm okay laying that 1 point on the road at Oakland.
Yeah, this one, I understand where you're coming from, and I think that Oakland is definitely going to be a team that we should look to fade a lot this year because we talked about them last week in the preview. They're just an aging team, and John Gruden is there more as a figurehead, I think, than an actual football coach. But I also think that if there's any one game this season that the Raiders are going to get up for, it may be that Monday night opening week one game. And I think that if there's any coach that can get his team amped and ready to play in week one, it's going to be John Gruden. So I do have a little bit of pause in this one, but I think we could probably talk about it a little more, do a little more digging here over the next couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely talk come Friday when we make these picks, or Saturday, I guess. The last game that you put on here is Philly. They're at home. They're going to play Washington. We know Washington stinks. Originally, you had this number at -7, but it's actually up to 9 points now. Again, one of these dangerously high, you know, favorites at home. What are you thinking about Philly?
Well, and breaking news, it's tens across the board now. 10.5 at 5 dimes. So I do think that Philadelphia is going to beat them handily on Sunday. But again, when we talk about teams getting to double digits, it's just a whole another ball game. Washington is going to be set up to get destroyed. Their offensive line is just in shambles. Same with Cincinnati. I think there's a good reason why both of these spreads are so high.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, you know, we'll have to discuss it. One of the things that another VSiN discussion, I think it was actually Saturday morning, they were discussing how, I think it's road division dogs are often the ones that you need to identify, especially in week one or two or something. So one of the reasons why I stayed from this one initially was because of that. And even the Cowboys are, they're 7 point favorites at home against the Giants, but that's a road division dog. And those are the ones that are tough to predict because these teams play so many times. They know the teams very well and they get up for the games, right? And it's, in my case, I guess it's like, what you've got here, you know, with the Broncos. I mean, that's actually a road favorite, but to me, I don't know. It's just tough. We're going to have to pick our poison and figure out which one will go. I'm a little bit worried about that 10. I'm not going to take the 10, but we'll see what the contest says. I mean, are they all going to be 10 points? All these games we picked, and then we're just going to have to pick one of them, or we'll have to go with the 7 point ones, or, you know, maybe we'll change focus to Cleveland at home, you know, against Tennessee or something, you know what I mean? Something like that. So,
or Detroit on the road at Arizona.
Oh my God. Well, I'm telling you, VSiN was pumping that game up, and I'm like, I get it. Arizona stinks, but I like to be behind a team that I know I have some confidence in. I have no confidence in Detroit. So,
you know, the other angle we didn't touch on, and it's something we might want to consider, is how poor New Orleans has been in week one at home the last 3 years. I mean, if you recall last season, they lost outright to Tampa Bay as double-digit favorites.
They did. I think they lost the year before, too. It's true. There are a couple angles. Even the Patriots, they're usually not good in week one. They're toasting the Steelers, you know, 5.5 points favorites at home. Yeah, I mean, you know, we got to get a little bit uncomfortable in week one. The disadvantage of doing this contest in general is that we can't use our metrics that we did last year, right? It's a new year. And I think, you know, even if I do my index, you can't even do that for another, you know, couple weeks till you get some data. So the first 2-3 weeks, we are really guessing at, you know, making handicaps based on kind of theories. It's not a lot of data going on. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I think one thing we can both agree on in this tete-a-tete is that we're going to strictly avoid Thursday night games because I think we mentioned on one of the initial podcasts, if you put in a Thursday night play, you have to put in all five of your picks as well. And that limits our ability to do the last-minute handicapping or get the late-breaking news on injuries as well.
Yeah, the injuries won't usually come out sometimes till Friday with practice reports. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode. I know it's a hearty episode. It's probably a little longer than we usually would like, but it kind of wraps up our previews, and then we can go into our kind of weekly schedule. We're just kind of handicapping games themselves. And a couple things, I don't know if we're going to try to do a live hit from the sports book, but we're going to be at the sports books in Vegas on Saturday and Sunday. We're very excited to enter the Circa contest, the Circa Million, and also just get out there and get in the mix. I mean, it's my first time in Vegas and definitely the first time in this level of sports betting in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we don't end up doing a live hit, I'm sure that we're going to be out and about and posting lots of information all over our social media channels. And by all means, if any of you listeners are in town, definitely reach out to us and let's meet up and grab a drink and share a wager.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
So looking forward to this opening weekend. It's kind of like Christmas morning here, so should be an awesome weekend, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, good luck to all you listeners out there with your opening weekend bets. That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.